Okay, so what we have to do is the following calculation. So I have my action of the slow fields, which is given by a zero of phi less minus so log of the expectation value of of e to minus s interaction, right? So if e to minus s interaction, which depends on both the slow and the fast fields, and so this average is taken with respect to the fast modes. Okay. Okay, and so the main kind of technical problem is how to evaluate this average, right? Okay, and so to do that, we are going to use the formal result that you have that you should have discussed in your tutorial yesterday, I guess. So this is the cumulant expansion. So basically, just to remind you, so let's say if omega is any random variable, and in this case, omega is going to be phi greater, right? Then the following is true, that average of e to the omega can be written as e, and then what's called cumulant expansion. Okay, so expansion in the following cumulants of omega. So the first cumulant is just the expectation value of omega itself. Then the second cumulant is so expectation value of omega squared minus expectation value of omega squared, and so on. Okay, and we will see what the physical meaning of cumulants a little bit later. Okay. For now, just accept this as kind of a formal result. And so we will really need only cumulant expansion to this quadratic order for what we'll do. Okay, but in principle, you can carry it out easily to any order. So then, if I apply this formula to expectation value of e to minus s interaction, then I get the following result, and this is equal to a zero of phi less, right? Then I will have, okay, so the first cumulant is going to be just the average value of S interaction with respect to the fast modes, right? So plus average value of S interaction phi less and phi greater, taken with respect to the fast modes. Let me actually drop that zero greater. So just by default, we'll understand that all the integrals, all the averages are taken with respect to the fast modes. And then the second cumulant, so minus 1/2, S interaction squared average minus average of S interaction zero squared. Okay. So today I will probably only be able to get through the calculation of this term. Tomorrow we'll hopefully finish everything. So it's not It's fairly simple calculation, but you know, somewhat involved. But you know, I think it's necessary to go through it in all the details to feel comfortable to understand what's it all about. Okay, so let's start with this one. This is fairly simple. So I have, let me explicitly write what S interaction is. So phi less and phi greater. So this is equal to U divided by 4 factorial. And let me use the following shorthand notation for momentum integral. So instead of writing out all the measures, you know, dk1 to pi to the d up to dk4 to pi to the d, I will just write integrals like this. So integral and then with subscripts k1, k2, k3, k4. Okay, so that sign means that I have the appropriate measures, integration measures here. And so the integral is from 0 to lambda. So I have phi less of k1 plus phi greater of k1 times phi less of k2 plus phi greater of k2 times phi less of k3 plus phi greater of k3 times phi less of k4 plus phi greater of k4, right? Okay, so there will be several types. So when I multiply all the terms here, there will be several types of distinct contributions. So let me just write them all out. Uh-huh.
Are you using a delta function?
Yeah, of course. No, you're right. I was wondering if I should include the delta function also in here by default, but maybe not. So times 2 pi to the d delta k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, right? So in principle, there are 16 terms here, right? If I just multiply all the phi's through, but there are only six, I think, distinct ones, even less, five distinct ones. So let me just write out the distinct contributions here. So I'll have u divided by 4 factorial. So integral from 0 to lambda, k1, k2, k3, k4, 2 pi to the d delta of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4. Okay, so the first term we're going to have is obviously, so if I just multiply only the slow fields, right? And there is only one such term. So I have phi less of k1, phi less of k2, phi less of k3, phi less of k4. And let me call this term A, capital A. So here, you know, this just goes into S prime of phi less as is, right? There is nothing to average here. This only depends on the slow modes, right? Then similarly, there will be a term which depends only on the fast modes. There is also only one such term, right? So plus phi greater of K1, phi greater of K2, phi greater of K3, phi greater of K4. Let me call this B. Okay. And so this term will just give us some kind of some constant after I integrate over phi greater, right? It does not depend on phi less. And as usual, I will just ignore it, right? Because this just gives me a constant contribution to S prime of phi less, right? So this is unimportant. Then, so I will have terms which contain, let's say, one slow field and three fast fields, right? And there will be four, I guess. Let's just make sure. No, so there will be six such terms, and the six. No, sorry. Yeah, so there will be four such terms, and four is just the number of ways you can choose one out of four, right? And I can always bring it to the form, let's say, phi less of K1 times phi greater of K2, K3, K4, simply by renaming the integration variables, right? So I'll have plus 4 phi less of K1, phi greater of K2, phi greater of K3, phi greater of K4. Okay. Okay. Plus, so now obviously there will be four terms where I have one phi greater and three, so one fast field and three slow fields, right? So let's say I'll call this C. Oops, plus 4 phi greater of K1, phi less of K2, phi less of K3, phi less of K4. Right? And finally, there will be terms with two slow fields and two fast fields, right? And there will be six such terms because that's then six is a number of ways you can choose two out of six, two out of four, sorry. Okay. So I'll have plus six B, C, D plus six phi less of K1, phi less of K2, phi less of sorry, phi greater of K3, phi greater of K4. Okay. D, E. Okay. Okay, so that's it. These are all the distinct terms. Now, so again, we don't have to worry about this one because this just goes as is to S prime of phi less. This one gives us a constant. So what about C and D? Right? So averaging with respect to the fast modes means what? It means 1 over z0 integral d phi greater e to minus s0 of phi greater, and s0 of phi greater is quadratic in phi greater. Right? So this means that if I have odd numbers of phi greaters, right, then this integral is going to vanish, right? Because this is an even function of phi greater, It only depends on the phi graders quadratically. While if I have any odd number of phi graders in here, this is going to be an odd function. So the integral, this integral is going to vanish. So this means that when I take an average, this term disappears and this term disappears because it has odd numbers of phi graders, okay? So this means that C and D disappear after averaging. Okay, is this part clear?
Could you explain it again? Sorry.
So, well, it's just because so averaging means integrating over phi graders, right? With this weight, which is an even function of phi greater, right? Because it's e to minus something times phi greater squared for every k. While if I have an odd number of phi graders here, what I'm integrating is an odd function, right? So I'm integrating from minus to plus infinity an odd function, right? So then that's zero. So then the only term we actually have to work with is this one, the last one, E.
Sorry, could you say again what it was, why we disregard A?
We don't disregard it, but there is nothing to calculate here, right? It only depends on the slow fields. So this term just goes as is into S prime of phi less. There is nothing to calculate. I mean, we don't throw it away. It's there, but okay. So let's now calculate the average of E. Okay, so let me write this, write it like this. So E, let's say the expectation value of E is equal to, I have U divided by 4 factorial times 6 times integral from 0 to lambda, K1, K2, K3, K4. So 2 pi to the d delta K1 plus K2 plus K3 plus K4, right? And so then I have so phi less of K1. Phi less of K1, phi less of K2, times the expectation value, times the average of this product, phi greater of K3, phi greater of K4. Okay? So in general, you know how to evaluating this kind of averages of products of fields. This is what Weak theorem is about, and you've discussed this in one of your tutorials, I guess, already. But here we don't even have to use Weak's theorem. It's just a product of two fields. Okay. So how do we calculate this average? So let's write it out explicitly. So I have phi greater of K3. Phi greater of K4, 0. So this is equal to 1 over Z0 integral d phi. Phi greater of K3, phi greater of K4. And then I have E to minus let me just remind myself of notation here. So I have e to minus 1/2 integral dk 2 pi to the d, and the integral is from lambda over b to lambda. So k squared plus r, and then I have absolute value of phi greater of k squared, right? So what this is then is basically just a Gaussian integral of the type, you know, x squared e to minus x squared, okay? And it's non-zero only when k3 is equal to minus k4. Because then what I have downstairs is just modulus of phi of k3, let's say, squared. In all other cases, this integral is zero. Okay? So basically, you know, simple way to think about this is that you have to have something that looks exactly like this in front of the exponential for this integral to be non-zero. Otherwise it's going to be zero. Okay. And so what this is equal to. So to evaluate this integral, actually it's convenient to go back from integral over k to a sum over k. Okay, so let me first rewrite it in this way. So this is 1 divided by z0 integral d phi. Let me write this term in the following way as phi greater of k3 phi star greater of minus k4, right? I use the fact that phi star of k is phi of minus k. And then here I have e to minus 1 divided by v, right? So the prescription for going between integral and sum is 1 over v sum goes into integral d dk 2 pi to the d. So minus 1 over 2v sum over k. So k squared plus r phi greater of k modulus squared, right? So then this integral is simply a multidimensional Gaussian integral. Yeah.
In the integration measure, is it over all phi or just phi greater?
Well, yeah, it's over d phi greater, of course. Yeah. Okay, so now, now this is simply a multidimensional Gaussian integral, right? And this integral is proportional to the value of this integral is just proportional to the coefficient of phi greater of k modulus squared, right? The inverse coefficient. So then what I get is v divided by, let's say, k3 squared plus r, and then Kronecker delta of k3 and k4, right?
Over set zero,
probably.
Sorry? Over set zero.
No. So one over that zero times this is equal to that.
Mm-hmm.
increases. We get out of all of integral from minus infinity to infinity dx x squared e to minus a x squared divided by integral from minus infinity to infinity dx e to minus a x squared. Okay, so this is 1 over a. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is K3, K3,
K4. Oh, no, sorry. No, thank you. Yeah, this is K3 minus K4, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The bounds on the integral in the middle line are lambda over b to lambda.
Well, yeah, it's basically by default because these are
only defined.
These are phi greater. These are the fields phi greater. So the same.
So we don't need to explicitly
the same is true here. Yeah.
Okay.
Just so the fact that I have phi greaters here implies that the k's are bounded by lambda over b and lambda.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So this I can write in the following way as V. And so this thing I will call G0 of case 3 delta of K3 minus K4. So G0, you know, especially in a quantum field theory context, you would call this propagator of your particles, right? So I will call this propagator as well. So this is propagator of the fast moles. Propagator or Green's function. Okay. So now this would be the result for when k is discrete. Now let me go back again to continuous k. Okay, but this is simple. I just replace v times Kronecker delta by 2 pi to the d times a delta function. Okay, so this gets replaced by G0 again of K3, 2 pi to the d times delta of K3 plus K4. Okay? Okay, so let's just plug this result into the expression for E. Right, so what do I get? Let me erase this. So the average value of E is equal to, so U divided by 4, right? And then I have integral 0 to lambda, k1, k2, k3, k4, 2 pi to the d, delta of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4. So phi less of k1. Phi less of K2. And then, so I'm plugging this thing, 2 pi to the d delta of K3 plus K4. And then the propagator, the fast mole propagator of K3. right? Okay, so this delta function gives me k3 equals minus k4, and then, okay, so then this disappears. From here I get then delta k1, I get k1 equals minus k2. So therefore, I get just two momentum integrals, two wave vector integrals remaining. So let me call them. So let me call k1 equals minus k2. Let this be k now, and then k3 equals minus k4. Let this be q. Okay. So then I have u over 4 integral over k and over q. So 2 pi to the 2d, right? So phi less of k modulus squared, because I have phi less of k, phi less of minus k, yeah.
2 pi to the minus 2d, because for every k integral you have 2 pi to the d, right?
No. So the integration measures are absorbed into here, into this sign.
Okay.
Right? I'm just using shorthand.
All right.
So in fact, those.
You integrated already over k3 and k4, right?
Integrating over, over k and q. So I've renamed k1 to k and k3 to q, and those two delta functions leave only two integrals out of 4.
Right,
so I'm integrating over k and q now.
So if you're absorbing the factor of 2 pi to the 2d, then it shouldn't appear here.
You're right, yeah, thank you. That's right. Right, so what it means, this 2 pi to the d cancels 2 powers of 2 pi to the d in here, right? So then what remains is just 1 over 2 pi to the d here, which is absorbed into this side. Yeah, thank you. Okay? And then I have G0 of Q, right? Okay, so what remains is just to evaluate this integral over Q of the fast mode propagator. Okay? So let's do this integral. So let me call this integral I1. So I1 explicitly is equal to integral from lambda over b to lambda dq 2 pi to the d g0 of q. So this is integral from lambda over b to lambda. So clearly g0 of q so it depends only on the magnitude of q, right? So I can use spherical coordinates in d dimensions. So this gives me s sub d, the surface area of unit sphere in d dimensions, divided by 2 pi to the d, right? So then I have dq to d minus 1 divided by q squared plus r, okay? So this integral, actually, the easiest way to evaluate it is just to expand this function 1 over q squared plus r in Taylor series with respect to q. Yeah.
One thing. Why do we have the limits with the lambda over b? We're making the integral between 0 and lambda from the beginning.
No, so this is the propagator of the fast modes, right? So for the fast modes, phi the fast by definition, basically the fast wave vectors are restricted from lambda over b to lambda, right? That was our definition of phi less of k. This is equal to phi of k when, you know, momenta are slow, while it's zero for k greater than lambda over b, but then phi greater of k is the other way around, right? Zero here and then phi of k when it's between lambda over b and lambda. Okay, so if these are fast momenta, then by definition, the integral is restricted from lambda over b to lambda. While for slow fields, the integral is restricted from zero to lambda over b. Okay. Maybe I should just, you know, not even write the integration limits here, because the limits of integrations are implicit in the definition of what phi less and phi greater is. So let me, to evaluate it, let me expand it. Actually, I said it wrong, not expand it, not with respect to Q in Taylor series, but with respect to R divided by Q squared, right? So R is actually small, since we are interested in things that happen near the critical point where R is vanishing, right? But Qs here are fast momenta. They are large always. They never get close to zero. Therefore, I can easily expand in Taylor series with respect to R divided by Q squared. Okay? So this is approximately equal to integral, or just exactly equal to integral from lambda over b to lambda. Let me just pull the constants in front. So I have S sub d 2 pi to the d, and then integral from lambda over b to lambda dq, q d minus 1, and then so the expansion. So I have 1 over q squared here, and then 1 minus r divided by q squared, and so on. Okay. I'll just calculate explicitly the first term in this expansion and write down the result. Okay. So this is equal to, let me erase this here. Okay, so the first integral is integral from lambda over b to lambda of q to d minus 3, right? So I have I1 equals S sub d 2 pi to the d. So the first integral, again, is integral of q to d minus 3. So this is 1 over d minus 2 q to d minus 2 taken between the limits, right? Then the second one is r minus r, and then q to d minus 5. So minus r divided by d minus 4 q d minus 4 taken between those limits, and then so on. So you see here, by the way, that you know, if we had the lower limit to be zero, you would get divergent results here. Okay, but since we are integrating over the fast modes, the result is finite. So this is S sub d 2 pi to the d. So I get lambda to d minus 2 minus lambda over b to d minus 2 d minus 2 minus r divided by d minus 4 lambda to d minus 4 minus lambda over b to d minus 4 and so on. And so now let me simplify this by using the fact that I'm choosing b to be a number which is slightly greater than 1. Okay? So I can, let me write b then in the following way. I write b as e to delta l, where delta l is small. Okay? Yeah.
What happens in two dimensions?
Sorry?
I mean, the limit exists.
Yeah, so nothing bad is going to happen in two dimensions. You'll see. So let's just continue for a second. Okay. So let me write b in this way, where delta l is small. Okay. So delta l is going to zero. Then, so let me, for example, take this thing. So this is 1 minus 1 divided by b to d minus 2. So this is equal to 1 minus e to minus d minus 2 times delta l, right? And I'm going to expand this to leading order in delta l using the fact that delta l is small, right? So this is equal to approximately d minus 2 times delta l, right? So you see that this d minus 2 here is actually canceled by this d minus 2. Okay. So then this whole thing is equal to approximately S sub d 2 pi to the d. So I have lambda to d minus 2. From here I will get just minus r times lambda d minus 4 and so on. And everything is multiplied by delta l, right? And now this series just sums into the following thing. So this is S sub d 2 pi to the d lambda to the d divided by 1, sorry, divided by r plus lambda squared, and everything times delta l. Okay? So very simple result. Okay, so then we have finally that the expectation value of E, so let me erase this now. So expectation value of E is equal to, so U divided by 4 times I1, where I1 is equal to this, right? And then integral over k phi less of k squared. Okay, so now, so we are done with the with this calculation to first order, to first cumulant in S interaction. Okay, so let's, before we go to second cumulant, let's actually analyze what we have at the, at this point. Okay, so okay, so let me collect all the terms that I have. So my action of the slow fields is going to have the following form, right? So I have a zero of phi less now let me actually write it out explicitly immediately. So a zero of phi less is just 1/2 integral over k, k squared plus r, phi less of k squared, right? Then I have this term, so plus u divided by 4, I1 integral over k, phi less of k squared. And you see that, so the what this term does is changes r, right, in a zero of phi less. So the effect of integrating over the slow modes is to change the value of r at this order. Yeah.
There's still this term with a.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm gonna add that. So there is still the fourth order term. So plus u divided by 4 factorial. And then, so integral k1, k2, k3, k4, 2 pi to the d. So delta of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, phi less of k1, phi less of k2, phi less of k3. And phi less of k4. Okay. Okay. So this is the first step of the RG transformation. We've integrated over the fast modes, right? So now what we want to do is the second step, which is rescaling the wave vector variables here to bring the cutoff to the same value as before. Okay. So that we can directly compare this with what we had before, right? Okay, so I'll rescale k to k times b, right? And I also want to keep the coefficient here to be equal to 1/2. So for this, as you remember, I have to rescale the fields. So I'll define, so let me call this k prime, I guess, is equal to k times b, and phi prime of k prime is going to be z inverse, and explicitly z inverse, as we found, is equal to b to minus d plus 2 minus eta, and the eta, the value of eta we still have to find, times phi less of k, right? Right? Okay, so let me just plug those rescalings into S prime. So I have S prime of phi prime is equal to so 1/2 integral over k prime. I'll have a factor of b to minus g from the integration measure, right? Then k prime squared b squared, b inverse squared plus r plus u over 4 I 1 times b to d plus 2 minus eta times phi prime of k prime modulo squared, okay? And then the quartic term, so plus u divided by 4 factorial, so I'll get integral k1 prime, k2 prime, k3 prime, k4 prime, so b to minus 4d from the integration measure, right? Then b to the g from the delta function times 2 pi to the d k1 prime plus k2 prime, k3 prime plus k4 prime. And then b to twice d plus 2 minus eta from 4 from 4 fields phi, and then phi prime of k1 prime, phi prime of k2 prime, phi prime of k3 prime, phi prime of k4 prime, right? Okay, so now, so the purpose of this rescaling of phi's, right, is to keep the coefficient of k squared term in the rescaled variables to be still equal to 1/2, right? So therefore, it's clear here that at this level, the value of eta is just 0, right? Because this b to d plus 2 is simply canceled by this b to minus d plus 2, right? So the anomalous dimension is simply equal to 0 here, okay? But that's of course only true to this particular first order in first cumulant in S interaction, and we will see just a little bit later that what we are actually expanding in, as I mentioned, is the deviation of the dimensionality of space from 4. Okay, so each one of those higher cumulants is proportional, in fact, to a higher power of the deviation of dimensionality from 4. Okay. It's not obvious now, but will become obvious later. Okay, so at this order in the calculation, the anomalous dimension is equal to 0. So then, what do we get? We get so S prime of phi prime, right? So this is equal to 1/2. Integral over k prime. So here everything cancels. I have k prime squared. Then, so this coefficient r plus u over 4 I 1 is multiplied by b squared, right? Plus r plus u over 4 I1 times b squared, right? And then, so phi prime of k prime modulo squared. And then in this term, plus u divided by 4 factorial, so I get, b to minus d, right? B to 4 minus d, 4 minus d. And then integral k1 prime, k2 prime, k3 prime, k4 prime, 2 pi to the d, delta function, 1 prime, k4 prime, and then phi prime of k1 prime, phi prime of k4 prime. Okay? Okay, and so now, I've brought this action for the slow fields to exactly the same form as the original one, right? So the cutoff now is from zero. The cutoff now is lambda because I've rescaled k's, right? So now, therefore, this is my new r, right? And this is my new u. Okay, so I have, let me erase this. Oops. So I have mu r, which I will call r prime, is equal to r plus u divided by 4 I1 times b squared, right? And then u prime is just equal to u times b to 4 minus d, okay? So these are called RG recursion relations, right? So they relate the coefficients R and U, which define my effective action, which define my action, you know, one step before and one step after RG transformation, okay? So now what I want to do is rewrite them in a differential form, in a form of differential equations, again, using the fact that this B, this step B, is small. Right, or b is close to 1. Okay, so these are RG recursion relations, and let's rewrite them in differential form. So again, I'll use that b. I can write b as e to delta l, assuming that delta l is small. Right. So then, so let's look at the first one. I have r prime equals r plus u divided by 4 I1 times e to twice delta L. So this I can expand as r plus u over 4. And then I1, so I want an explicit expression for I1 because I1 is also proportional to delta L, right? So I1 is SD 2 pi to the G, lambda to the G, R plus lambda squared times delta L. And then here I have 1 plus 2 delta L, right? And I'll leave here only terms linear in delta L, up to first order in delta L. Okay. So what I will get then, so I get R, right, plus 2R delta L, plus u over 4 s d 2 pi to the d lambda to the d r plus lambda squared times delta l, right? And that's it to first order in delta l. And now let me call, so r minus r prime divided by delta l, I'll just write this as dr dl, right? Where l is now going to be a continuous variable, which specifies kind of the stage of this RG procedure. Okay, if I imagine doing this over and over. And so then I get the following equation, that dr dl is equal to 2r plus u over 4 s d 2 pi to the d lambda to the d r plus lambda squared. Okay? Okay, so this is the first RG equation, the equation for r. Now, so if I do the same thing for u, this is even simpler. So for u, I get du dl is just equal to 4 minus d times u. Okay? So a very important feature here is that so the coefficients of the leading terms on the right hand side of the of those equations are just dimensions of the corresponding quantities, right? So this 2 here is just the dimension of r. And this 4 minus d is the dimension of u. Okay, and this is always true. So you can write down those leading terms in the RG equations always without any calculations. All you have to do is know the dimensions of the corresponding quantities. Okay, and now you can kind of see why it matters whether the corresponding dimension is positive or negative. Right, if the dimension is negative, then so if you imagine starting somewhere, then this term, at least, will want the corresponding quantity to decrease exponentially if the dimension is negative, okay? And usually, there are sometimes subtleties, but usually it's enough to figure out whether the corresponding quantity is relevant or irrelevant, okay? Because what this first term wants is going to be the dominant thing, okay? Yeah.
When we go to higher order in this Q and expansion and these differential equations, will have other terms.
Right? Yeah. So actually, this equation is done. So we won't need to add any more terms to this equation at up to second order in. So let me actually already introduce this notation. Let me call this deviation of my dimensionality from 4. Let me call this epsilon. Okay, so then this equation is actually du dl is equal to epsilon u. Okay, and so now let me explain you why what we are doing is actually expansion and epsilon. Okay, so if you just look at those equations, right, at this order, right. So let's find the fixed points of those equations, right? So the fixed points will just correspond to points where the right-hand side vanishes, right? So then the derivatives of r and u, these are the points where the derivatives of r and u are going to zero, right? So let me erase this. So fixed point corresponds to point where dr dl is equal to du dl is equal to zero. right? So here, you know, since the both right-hand sides are linear in R and U, clearly the only fixed point is R equals U equals 0, right? So at this order, at first order in the cumulant, so I have only one fixed point, R star is equal to U star is equal to 0, and this is called Gaussian fixed point. The reason it's called Gaussian is because U is equal to 0, right? So the theory at this point has a form of just a Gaussian theory or Klein-Gordon theory for a free particle. Okay, and we'll talk about the meaning of this fixed point later. So to get a non-trivial fixed point, we really have to go to next order to calculate the second cumulant. Okay, and let me just so we will do the calculation next time, but let me just write down the answer that we will get. So this equation is not going to change, but in this equation I will get the following term minus 3 u squared divided by 2 s d 2 pi to the d lambda to the d r plus lambda squared squared, okay? And so now, so if I want to find fixed points of this, right, this clearly has an, in addition to the Gaussian fixed point, which is always there, this also has a non-trivial fixed point, right? So it's clear here that up to this coefficient, that's unimportant, the value of U at this non-trivial fixed point is just proportional to epsilon, right? Because I'm just equating U squared is equal to epsilon times U, right? So at non-trivial fixed point, which is also called Wilson-Fisher fixed point, I will have U star proportional to epsilon, right? And therefore, R star also proportional to epsilon, to minus epsilon. Yeah.
So it appears that if I take D to be 4, then RG gives me no information, right? I mean, if the fixed point is only the Gaussian fixed point.
Well, I mean, then you will have to go to higher orders. So,
and there's guaranteed that I have a non-trivial fixed point for D equals 4?
Well, I mean, so D equals 4 is marginal dimension, right? So what you'll find is that in D greater than 4, this fixed point is stable, while the non-trivial one is unstable, while in D less than 4, it's the other way around. This one is unstable, while this one is stable. I'll explain what that means later, but the point is that in D equals to 4 is the kind of the transition point, so everything is non-trivial at that point, and there, to really see what happens, you have to go to higher order in U. Right, and then R star at this fixed point is proportional to minus epsilon, right? And okay, so this the fact that U star at the fixed point is proportional to epsilon, this explains why what we are doing is an expansion in epsilon, because cumulant expansion is just an expansion in U, right? Because this is average of S interaction, which is proportional to U, right? So you clearly see here that the right-hand side of this equation is just an expansion in powers of U, right? But so the U itself, of course, in general is not small, right? However, it is small at the fixed point. And as we will see, the fixed point is what we are interested in. Okay, fixed point corresponds to the critical point. And so as long as we are interested in what happens at the critical point, we are really doing expansion and powers of the deviation of dimensionality from 4. Okay, so this is what justifies cutting off the cumulant expansion at second order. Okay, if we just want to find critical exponents to leading order in epsilon. Okay, so those results are generally not very accurate, right? Although sometimes they are. But so in principle, this kind of calculation can be continued indefinitely, although complexity, of course, grows. So at second order, we will be able to do all the calculations by hand. Already at third order, enumerating all the relevant terms requires writing a computer program. But people now do these calculations to, I think, up to 6th order, if I'm not mistaken. So that's already a very sophisticated calculation. And if you have this kind of expansion for critical exponents in powers of epsilon to 6th order, you can already extrapolate pretty accurately to the dimension you are interested in, which is typically 3, right? So epsilon is equal to 1. Epsilon is not really small, but at 6th order you can extrapolate pretty accurately, even to epsilon equals to 1. Okay. I guess I've been going a little bit faster than I expected. So let's now start then the calculation of the second cumulant. And we'll finish it next time.
Two things. First one, apparently the non-trivial fixed point depends on the cutoff.
Right. What we will see, in fact, is that the values of the exponents will not actually depend on the cutoff. Right. They will only depend on epsilon.
So the idea here is that you have not the fixed point for randomization transformation, you have U star and R star. So the idea is that you're going to write the action in terms of those fixed points and calculate the critical exponent from
that. So the way that we will you'll see that the way we will actually calculate the critical exponents will require the analysis of the stability, the analysis of the solutions of those equations near fixed points. And then, so it turns out that the critical exponents will be related to the, to the Lyapunov exponents, to the stability exponents of those equations. So we won't have to. All we have to do once we derive those equations is to just analyze those equations. Again, it's not obvious now, but we will see how that works later. Okay. Okay, so let me, in the remaining 15 minutes, let me just start the calculation of the second cumulant, which is necessary to get this term. Okay, and so the reason, that calculation is useful is because, so to do that, I won't be able to just, even at the second order, I won't be able to do just a brute force calculation, meaning just writing out all the terms on the blackboard. I will have to do something a little bit smarter. So I'll need to use the diagram technique. And so that technique can already be extended to calculate these to higher orders. Okay. So that's why doing this is useful. Oops. Okay, so So what I have to do now is evaluate the contribution of the second Humulon. So let me write out again that f prime of phi less. So this is a zero of phi less plus average of S interaction, and then minus 1/2 S squared interaction average minus S interaction average squared. And so far we've calculated the contribution of those two terms. So now we have to do this. And so you see the problem now, right? So already this term, right? If I just simply wrote out all the distinct terms, contain five distinct terms, right? When I start taking squares, right? So that's going to contain 25 different terms. That's already a bit too much, right? Even to write it on a piece of paper, you know, let alone on blackboard. So to efficiently kind of do the bookkeeping of all the different terms, it's useful to use Feynman diagrams. Okay, so let's see how this works. So first of all, let me again write out explicitly S interaction, while S phi greater. So this is U divided by 4 factorial. Integral k1, k2, k3, k4, 2 pi to the d. So delta function of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4. And then phi less of k1 plus phi greater of k1. So on, phi less of k4 plus phi greater of k4. Diagrams were invented by Feynman, I guess, in the context of QED calculations. And so the reason they were useful there is because there you do perturbation theory in, the inverse fine structure constant, right, 1/137. In general, diagrams are not that useful. Most of you probably never use them in your actual research. But the RG calculations is one instance where they are indeed useful. Okay. So whenever you have large number of terms, which are difficult to just write out explicitly, that's when diagrams are useful. Okay, so let me introduce the following notation then. So with each such thing, I'm going to associate, I'm going to represent it graphically in the following way. So I'll have a vertex with four legs. So each leg is labeled by one of those four momenta, or one of those four wave vectors. So let's say k1, k2, k3, k4. Order here is completely arbitrary because those all those phis are the same, right? If I had, let's say, phis and phi stars, then the order would matter. Here it does not. Now the vertex of this diagram is going to represent. So vertex is going to represent this factor. So U divided by 4 factorial times 2 pi to the d. Delta of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, okay? So sometimes it's also useful to add arrows here. I mean, in our case, we don't actually need them, but to just sort of kind of have the physical meaning of this clearer, right? So you can think of this then, right? So since this term, so if you think of this in the quantum field theory context, this term represents interactions between particles, right? So you can think then of two particles colliding here, right? So the interaction strength is U. This delta function simply represents the momentum conservation at the interaction, right? And so I have those two particles colliding, and then I have, so these are momenta before the interaction, K3 and K4 are momenta after the interaction. And again, well, the fact that the arrows are all going in, I guess, expresses the fact that the total momentum is conserved. But in our case, we won't actually need the arrows. So in our case, we also need to distinguish, of course, between the slow fields and the fast fields, right? And I will do that by, so I will denote slow fields by the solid lines, while fast fields are going to be dashed lines, right? So for example, this kind of diagram will represent, so let's say this is K1, this is K2, K3, K4. So this is going to represent contribution to S interactions, to S interaction where I have two slow fields and two fast fields, right? So that's precisely the term that we dealt with in the previous calculation, right? So this is just equal to U divided by 4 factorial integral K1, K2, K3, K4, 2 pi to the d delta K1 plus K2 plus K3 plus K4 phi less of K1, phi less of K2, phi greater of K3, phi greater of K4, okay? So if I want to, so we saw before that if you just take the S interaction itself, right, the S interaction to the first power, this contains five distinct terms, right? And so I can easily represent them graphically by those diagrams. So let me just draw them out. So I had a term with four slow fields, which means graphically with four solid lines, right? I had a term with four fast fields, means four dashed lines. Then I had one solid line, three dashed lines.
Mm-hmm. Dash lines are the slow modes?
No, dash lines are fast modes. So solid lines are slow modes, dash lines are fast modes. So so this is three, so then I have three solid lines, one dashed line. And then, so this is four, and then five, so that term, two, solid lines, two dashed lines. Okay? So the process of averaging over the fast fields, I'm going to denote by connecting a pair of dashed lines, right? Because remember that when we average, we get non-zero results only when we have a pair of fast fields, right? And an average of any of a product of any number of fast fields can always be written by Wick's theorem as a sum of all the different of all the pairwise averages, right? So therefore, I can always represent this process by connecting somehow the dashed lines. So you know, so for example, in this term, the calculation that we just did corresponds to connecting those two dashed lines. Here, there is only one way to connect them, right? And so this response, I can redraw this diagram then in the following way. Okay, so this closed loop corresponds to taking the average of phi greater of K3, phi greater of K4. Right? And again, so as we just saw previously, when we calculated this average, so what do we get? We get, let me explicitly write down the expression that corresponds to this. So I get u divided by 4 factorial integral k1, k2, k3, k4, so 2 pi to the d delta of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4 phi less of k1 phi less of k2 and then average of phi greater of k3 phi greater of k4, right? And so this gives me G0, the propagator, the fast mode propagator of K3 times 2 pi to the d delta of K3 plus K4, right? And so then in this case, the integral here and the integral here are just decoupled, right? So I have integral over K, let's say here, and integral over Q here, right? So then this line will simply correspond to integral from lambda over B to lambda d dq 2 pi to the d g0 of Q, which is my I1. Okay? And so we'll see tomorrow how to write out those expressions corresponding to diagrams in the general case. Okay, it's pretty simple, in fact. Okay. So let me stop now, and we'll continue this tomorrow.